Hey, Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs here.
Greg Swartz from Bleacher Report.
So we're going to record a podcast that's going to have better quality than this, but we went to record a podcast in Quicklands Arena, and there is what age group is this?
I would estimate this to be about third grade.
So if you hear in the background, there's a third grade basketball game going between North Ridgeville and somebody else, and spacing's crap.
Oh.
Spacing's pretty bad.
We got some spacing issues, but, boy, these girls can dribble.
Yeah, it's, you know, good dribbling, some good passing I've seen. It's not on skill, but after this break, Greg and I are going to hop on the phone, get a better quality podcast for you, and talk about Cavs Sixers, which was not fun.
You know what? These girls might be in third grade, but I've seen better defense and passing and more three-pointers than I think I did in 2.5 hours of watching the Cavs.
My column, Greg Schwartz, hot takes coming up on Locked On Cavs.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Joining me now over the phone after we survived a small child basketball game, Greg Schwartz from Bleacher Report. Greg, this was not a fun game. This was one of the tougher Cavs games to cover, one of their worst performances of the season, maybe their worst performance of the season. Certainly some stuff in there that I didn't think was all, you know, a loss, but I thought a lot of stuff in there was just kind of tough and tough for them to sort of kind of get through. What to you stood out, positive or negative, from this game?
Yeah, I mean, I think the disparity in talent was pretty evident. You know, a lot of times if Cleveland's not playing a bad team, you know, if they're not playing a Washington or a Chicago or somebody like that, they're going to have to play a near perfect game to win. Their ball movement's going to have to be really, really good. They're going to have to hit their open shots. And if they don't, they're probably going to lose. And if they don't do that against a really good team like Philadelphia, it certainly has the potential to be, you're going to get nights like this where they go down by 30 in the game and they end up losing by 19. And that's just how it's going to be some nights when you play teams that are, frankly, on paper, a lot better than you, have a lot more talent than you do. So I think some of the key things that stood out to me was the assist, the ball movement. Philadelphia with 33 assists. I mean, that's huge. Anytime you can get over 30 assists in the game, you're probably going to win. And the Cavs had 14. The Cavs had just as many turnovers as they had assists. You're probably not going to win very many games with those numbers. I think they ended up making about 6 3-pointers. Again, in 2019 in the NBA, you're not going to win a lot of games just making 6 threes. The size differential in these teams, Cleveland's pretty small, especially in that backcourt.
John Beilein talked pretty clearly about that. I'll play that clip after this first segment, not to cut you off, but like he was like just like the size thing. It's like we're at a disadvantage there, and I think he's right in saying that.
Oh, absolutely. And on most nights, they're at a size disadvantage starting 2 6-foot-2 guys in the backcourt, especially when you go up against a guy who's 6'10" playing the point guard position. And, you know, like Beilein said, that messes up your whole defensive scheme because, okay, now we got to pull Jetty Osman to guard Ben Simmons. And, you know, and then we put one of our guards on Josh Richardson, who's 6'5", 6'6". So he's already, you know, creating a mismatch there. But then you have another 6'2" guy in your backcourt, and who's he going to guard? And, you know, tonight it was Tobias Harris, who's a 6'9" wing. So, you know, you play a team like Philly, you're really going to be outmatched in size, as most teams would be when they play them, but especially the Cavs when you have that smaller backcourt. So that kind of throws everything off too. Now you have to send help a lot of things. It kind of messes up your defense. This isn't a good matchup for them. I know they kept it close the other night in Philly when they played, but the differential in talent, the ball movement, and just the overall size for Philly, I feel like were three of the main points in this game.
Yeah, I think a couple things for me. First, I think Tobias Harris was much better than he was the other night. You know, he was just more effective. He was kind of the caliber of player you'd expect on that contract in this game. I thought the Cavs just really didn't do a good job of really kind of combating him. I would say, too, I don't quite know. I feel like this was a failure on, like, my part in not asking about this to either Kevin or Coach Beilein, but I thought Philadelphia did a much better job of not letting Kevin Love get established. And I thought when Kevin Love could not be established and when Kevin Love couldn't really get going, and you just sort of looked at how everything unfolded, I feel like the offense just lost a little bit of structure. That will, I think, make itself more apparent if I get a chance to rewatch this game, if I get a chance to kind of sift through this a little bit more. But when I think about this game, just my first reaction and taking some of the notes I did, Harris and Embiid combined for 41. Harris, 27 on 12 of 14 shooting. That's just light and day better than he was the other night. But Kevin Love, in 25 minutes, he doesn't play at the end of the game. John Beilein, I think, correctly pulled a lot of the key guys. 3 of 8 shooting, 2 of 5 from 3, 4 of 5 from the line, only had 6 boards, 12 points. That's not a Kevin Love performance that's going to carry you against a team like this. I thought Philadelphia just seemed to me, based on that first watch and from watching live, is going to have a different, they're going to get different viewpoints and everything as opposed to if you're watching at home on the television or something. So I will need to kind of rewatch this and see if there's something there to this. But I do think they did a better job than they did the other night of not letting Kevin and whomever else really get established in the paint and do good work and just kind of have their way in there. That's just something that when that happens, the Cavs just don't have like a counter to when their offense, which it has this sort of expected shape. It relies on the ball movement and guys like Kevin and Tristan making plays and Kevin in particular kind of being the focal point. When that gets disrupted, I don't think Sexton, I don't think Garland, I don't think Tristan obviously or Jetty or anyone else on this roster is capable of filling in like that. When a team like Philadelphia, who is a finals contender, can have a really good defense, all this stuff plays like it did today versus like it did on Tuesday, the Cavs aren't really capable necessarily of punching up their weight class like they have a couple times already this season.
No, I think, so much of what the Cavs do well runs through their power forward center combination of Love and Thompson. And you look at that matchup, I mean, I know overall their team defensive numbers aren't what you'd expect for Philly. You'd expect them to be much better, but I can't find a better power forward center defensive combo in the NBA than Al Horford and Joel Embiid.
It's unreal. It's unfair.
No, even if you have Horford as your defensive center, I mean, he the last couple of years been so good with Boston and kind of anchored their defense. You move in power forward, which he's certainly capable of playing that. And then you've got a true rim protector in Joel Embiid. Somebody's just, I told Spencer Davies this today. I said, just walking by Joel Embiid in the locker room, rarely have I been by such a large human. I would say when I walked by Shaq at the finals a couple years ago, certainly that was a guy that towers over you. And a lot of these guys do, when you're up close and personal to them, but especially with Embiid. I mean, a guy that's 7'1", and he's not this, skinny 7'1". I mean, he's just massive with his shoulders and his frame. You could see a lot of the times a Cav would get in the paint and you really have to think twice when you have a guy like Embiid in there. So you factor that in. You factor the fact that Tristan has had so much success against Al Horford in the past. Well, he doesn't get to guard it because, you can't ask Kevin Love or Ante Zizic or one of these other guys to guard Embiid. You have to have Tristan on him. So then you don't get that good matchup that you want of Tristan on Al Horford. So just overall, it's not a good matchup for Cleveland as it is for most teams when they play Philly. And I think you really saw that tonight.
I think the other thing to me that comes out of this game, just to run through some of the stats so people are kind of have some context, this was not a good Cavs performance at all. 37.8 shooting from the field, 24% on 3 on the 6 of 25. They did get to the line 24 times, which remains kind of a weird strength for this team. Out-rebounded by 2, committed 15 turnovers leading to 16 76ers points. Philly had a slight advantage there. But Philly, 58 points in the paint, an effective field goal percentage of 60.1%. The Cavs with an effective field goal percentage of 40.1%. Philly, 17 points on the fast break. The Cavs with 8. There were just big discrepancies everywhere you wanted to kind of do it. Cavs overall have an offensive rating in this game of 94.2, a defensive rating of 113. Those are both pretty, pretty bad numbers. Towards the mid bottom on defense and obviously pretty horrific on the offensive end in this game. So it's overall just a really tough look. A lot of garbage time minutes there. Certainly that's going to factor in with the lineups we've seen. I would say, Greg, the biggest scare from this 114-95 loss was the Kevin Love non-injury. If you didn't watch the game, Kevin was drove past Furkan Korkmaz. Al Horford appeared to have his body turned and Kevin collides with him. He goes down. When I pulled it up, I was sitting next to Evan Damerill from Forbes and we were chatting about this and when it happened, and the arena did go pretty eerily silent. It was not a fun couple minutes there. And the whole team like went out there. Steve Spiro, their Cavs athletic trainer, goes out there. When you watch the replay, Kevin immediately is going to grab the back of his leg. But he's apparently fine. Comes back in the game, makes his free throws. Only comes out when he needs to. Had some ice in there after the game. I asked him if he was going to play tomorrow. He said he expects to. Beilein didn't indicate anything other that there's going to be any rest for Thompson or Love at this point, or Jetty or anybody else. I don't know if there's like much to say other than that, but I just felt like that was like probably to me maybe the kind of the scariest moment of the whole night.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, who cares about the loss as long as Kevin's okay. I think, you know, kind of had shades of last year when Love gets hurt, you know, 4-6 games into the season and then misses the next 60. Like that was kind of running through the back of my mind, like, oh, please don't let this be that sort of situation where this is serious. Because, you know, obviously Kevin's your best player. He's your best offensive focal point that you run through. And he just takes so much pressure off the young guys. And, you know, it gives them somebody to play through, a pick and pop partner. I mean, you just need Kevin out there for so many reasons. So, you know, big picture, yeah, you lost, but Kevin got to come back in the game. And John Beilein said, like, you know, we probably would have played more in the fourth quarter, you know, had we had the day off tomorrow, had they not had a game the following day. I go back to even media day. I remember asking Beilein, you know, will there be this year to rest Kevin Love periodically, like we do see from a lot of these stars? And he said, yes, he said that was very likely. We haven't seen that yet. And, you know, I think a game like tomorrow, that's probably your perfect time to do it, right? I mean, you've had an injury scare with him tonight. You're coming off a bad loss. Obviously you want to snap that, but you know, if you're, we'll see how that knee, you know, flares up tonight and what kind of treatment it needs, but why go out and risk that? You know, why not just give him the night off? You know, obviously it hurts your chances at winning, but long-term, you know, you need a healthy Kevin Love. So I wouldn't be surprised if they hold him out tomorrow night. And, you know, Beilein kind of said that was the plan, to do this periodically throughout the season. So I could see them starting it as soon as tomorrow.
I agree. I think if you look at just their minutes totals, Kevin is playing the most minutes per game he's played since the 2014-15 season, which was his first year with the Cavs. This coming into tonight, for him, and then coming in tonight for Tristan, this is the most minutes he's ever played per game in his career. He's been great. I think the last two games have maybe been his kind of most underwhelming of the season. I think tough matchups for him kind of have limited him a little bit in that regard, but it's worth noting. I would 100% rest them. I would 100%. I don't think there's a ton of upside of playing them in New York tomorrow. I think, you know, he gets his itch back. I think that the concern there, I guess, would be, and we're going to take a break here, and then we'll talk about the Larry Nance and Ante Zizic of this all in the next segment. But I would just say, when you look at the roster, if you don't have Larry, he's day-to-day right now. If you don't have Kevin and Tristan, or if one of them doesn't play, you're very thin up front, and maybe you're bad and that doesn't matter, but you still want to keep that structure, I think, for the young guys. I think they are trying to keep that in place, and that's kind of worth noting. All right, we're going to take one quick break here, and then we're going to be back with more Locked On Cavs with myself and Greg Schwartz. So stay tuned for that. And if you haven't already, go check out Locked On Browns. Jeff just did a great episode with Jake Burns, one of the best people on Browns Twitter. So go listen to that wherever you're listening to Locked On Cavs, and we'll be right back. All right, back here, Greg Schwartz, Bleacher Report. Greg, so the news from the big news coming out of Sunday in terms of what's going to impact the team going forward this week. Larry Nance is day-to-day. He was doubtful for this game, did not play. He was there in a very nice blue suit watching the game, kind of joking around. He does have a wrap on that left hand. He's day-to-day right now. I don't know if he's going to play tomorrow, but for you, when you think about what Larry Nance not being fully healthy sort of means for this group, can mean for this team, mean for the bench unit, what to you stands out?
Yeah, I think you saw it today. I mean, the ball movement suffered. Certainly Larry's a guy that you put in the second unit. You like having his playmaking and his facilitating and just, you know, his overall ability to wanting to make the right play and the extra pass and doing all that stuff. I think that was sorely missing from the second unit. You have Zizic back, but he's not going to give you the same type of skill set that Larry gives you. He can guard a little bit bigger players. Perimeter, he's not going to shoot threes like Larry can do. He's not going to be your playmaker. So I think that kind of shrinks the floor when you have a guy like Zizic out there instead of Larry Nance. And You know, look at the Cavs today, 14 assists, 6 3-pointers. I mean, those are all stuff that Larry can help you with. And I thought he would be a good matchup against a guy like Horford, who's, you know, doesn't have your traditional center size and is a little bit more mobile than most big men are. That would have been a good matchup for Larry to kind of guard him. So I think he just brings that extra dynamic, especially, you know, if you want to give Kevin Love a rest day, Larry can step in and be your starting power forward for a night. And, you know, he can excel in that role as a spot starter. So he just kind of gives you that security blanket, that safety net that you can have in that second unit, but also step up and be a starter. And a lot of the things he's good at, that's what the Cavs struggled at against the Sixers. And I think that was pretty clear to see.
Yeah, I think there are things with Nance that have been a little weird this year. I don't think he's looked as comfortable as the other kind of as the Levin Thompson. He, I think, is the third kind of driver of a lot of what worked for this team in theory. I think, you know, he's a weird body type. And, you know, he's probably best suited guarding smaller fours and some wings, some bigger wings, but maybe some bigger fours. But I think if you have him guard Embiid, something he talked about at Media Day, it's just like he's not going to be good at that. So I think Zizic has like, and I think Henson more notably have value in that regard. But he's also a guy that I think if he was like 2% better at any one of the skills he has, he's just instantly becomes much more valuable. I think Larry's good. I think Larry kind of is being put in, like, I think Tristan and Kevin are kind of in more optimal positions where, like, Larry's carrying with, like, Delly and KPJ and Clarkson. Like, it's just kind of weirder lineups where he's going to have to do some more stuff. That I just think he comes out looking a little worse just overall the context. I think he's a guy that if you can assemble a good team, he can be, like, your good 6th, 7th guy. But when he's, like, your 3rd, 4th best player, things get a little bit dicier there, I would say. But if I think him getting in a rhythm and staying healthy and being able to shoot and pass would really – just being able to do the stuff he's good at for a long stretch of time, I think, would kind of bear out in a nice way. I think if he's out and there's like a 10-minute cap on Zizic and, you know, it seems like Kevin and Tristan are going to play tomorrow in New York, at least as we're recording this now on Sunday, that's tough. I think they miss Larry in the second unit. And, like, I don't like, know what to think of Ante. I think he has an NBA skill set. Like, I think there are things he does that are useful. It's probably not as useful now. But, like, you just saw in this game, like, he's not the strongest guy. Beeline basically said he was winded, which he kind of was, like, didn't really say he was. Kind of said he'd been doing a bunch of cardio, whatever, after the game in his very short media availability because he's kind of a shy guy. But, like, I don't know. Like, I have a hard time just seeing how Zizic comes in and, like, helps other than being a body. Larry, I can see exactly how he's going to help. He's going to help stabilize things. I obviously would just rather him be healthy. There's no need to kind of force him playing. But I don't know, like, exactly what. I don't know when I think about if Larry's out and Zizic comes in, there's a body for body there, and I think they need bigs. I don't quite know how you approach using Zizic in a way that's going to kind of keep the flow of what's kind of gone going. I don't even know if I have, like, a strong take on how he played in his first game in, like, a year or 6 months or whatever on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm going to be a little mean for a second. I think Ante is going to be out of the league in a couple years. And I know he's very young. He just hasn't been able to get consistent. And I know he's been hurt. Like, he couldn't get consistent minutes when he was healthy and active. I think Spencer put it this way. He lumbers up and down the court. He's not the most graceful player. He kind of has that body type that would have fit in the NBA a lot better 10, 20 years ago. He will block shots occasionally. I don't see him becoming an effective 3-point shooter. Especially today, you could see his hands were awful. He had a couple passes that were right to him, pinpoint passes, could have gone up for 2 easy points.
He's got that David Njoku disease.
Or Timofey Mozgov from a couple years ago. You know, he gets hit in the hand with a pass, pass goes out of bounds. And just stuff like that, you know, if you're going to be a backup and be a quality backup, you have to finish plays like that. And, I mean, there's no excuses. And the fact that, you know, you see plays like that, the fact that I don't think he's ever going to be a reliable outside shooter. I know that he's young and I don't want to write him off yet. and he's obviously not in game shape yet, as Beilein said after the game. But I don't see a future for him in the NBA unless he really changes his body type, he really improves his shooting. I just don't see it. I think this team is going to be a lot better when John Henson is healthy and you can bring him back. I think he fits in the modern NBA as a little bit skinnier shot blocker, runs the floor better, started shooting threes for Milwaukee last year. I think he fits in with you so much better. And I don't want to write him off yet just because he's so young, but I think he's going to be out of the league in a couple of years. I really do.
I think Ante might, like, the way the game in Europe is played, that just might suit him a little bit better. And I think if you just want to look at, like, him and Henson have both basically played, like, one very, like, small chunk of a game this year. Henson played, like, 8 minutes before he got hurt again, and then Zizic played, like, 10-ish minutes tonight. Henson, like, clearly, like, he started off a little more rusty, I think, than Zizic did. And different matchups, it's hard to compare these things exactly. I don't think that's exactly fair to either of them to do that. But I look at Henson, and I just can, like, picture how he impacted the game in a really positive way. I just can't think of this game and think about how Ante did that.
No.
And that's, like...
No, not at all.
That's a major concern if you're thinking about how you want to utilize him or think about him as, like, a rotation piece. And if you're the Cavs, like, to be blunt about it, they declined his option for next year, which was worth, like, $3 million. You only decline an option that is that cheap if you just don't really envision him as part of your plan. They're not going to come out and say that. Beilein said he likes him and whatever. If you do not think he's part of your plan, if you don't, like, envision him as being part of your core or someone you want to have as a rotation piece going forward, if you don't think there's a chance of that when you're at the Cavs in the stage, you don't decline that option. Right? Like, there's no reason to do that unless you just are already sure that he's just not part of what you want to do going forward.
No, and think about that, because this is a team that your top two centers are going to be free agents this summer. Tristan Thompson is going to be a free agent. John Henson is going to be a free agent. You had a chance to bring back Zizic, like you said, for $3 million, and you turned it down. What does that say about your confidence level in Ante Zizic? I'm not trying to be mean, but
it's just realistic
that you would rather have that $3 million worth of cap space. I mean,
summer where you're already going to have a shit ton of cap space and, like, it's not a good crop. It's not like you want to spend all that money anyway.
No. So I think the writing is on the wall for him. I mean, at this point, he has no trade value if you want to deal him. The best thing you can do is try to maximize his value and, you know, that's not to say he won't come back to the Cavs next year. Maybe he gets in game shape and he shows you he can be a capable backup center and you bring him back, you know, on a 1-year minimum deal or something like that. But the fact that your top two centers are going to be free agents and he's only $3 million and you chose not to bring him back already, I think that tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Any last takes on this game before we just kind of move on to the state of things right now?
No, I don't want to talk about the game anymore. Let's move on.
This game sucked. That's my expert opinion, is that I stopped taking notes, hardcore notes in this game, like, kind of midway through. It was not fun. I appreciate everyone who came out. The Ring of Honor stuff was very cool. I thought everyone who came out, like, at least stayed for a while, is kind of the best way to put that. But, like, it was not the most kind of fun game there. All right, we're going to take a quick break here. And just so you know, if you want to support this show, a great way to do that is with MyBookie. Use your basketball knowledge to prove you have what it takes at MyBookie.ag, where they make it easy to play and even easier to get paid. Use promo code LOCKEDONNBA, and MyBookie will match 50% of your first deposit. If you can't visit MyBookie right now because you're listening on the go, you can find this and all the offers from Lockdown sponsors at lockdownpodcast.com/offers. We're going to be right back with more from myself and Greg Schwartz from Bleacher Report. All right, Greg, let's just talk positive things here. What do you, in this week, what's something you think you're positively looking forward to seeing? What is something you've seen in the last week or so with this Cavs group that has encouraged you? Is it what is just something that you've liked seeing in the last week or are looking forward to seeing if it continues in this next week or so?
What I really want to see is I want to see that one true breakout game from Darius Garland. And you see it in the smallest of flashes. There was one, he got into the paint. He had a kind of like this push shot off the glass It really showed off his touch. He had another one where he was top of the key. He was dribbling past a defender. He kind of lost the ball. He recovered it. He hit an in-rim three-pointer. And you're just like, wow. Like, he has that skill set, you know, like a Steph Curry, like a Trae Young, where he can just pull up from anywhere and hit that three. And we haven't seen that one breakout game from, you know, he hasn't hit that 20 points, that 20-point, 25-point game that you kind of would like to see by now. I understand he's basically a freshman in college since he played about five games last year. I understand that, you know, in a span of 10 games, he went from high school to I'm the starting point guard of an NBA team. I understand that, and I'm trying to be patient with him. But that potential is so tantalizing, where he has that perfect skill set for the modern NBA, where he can shoot it from 30 feet or 35 feet if he wants to do. And anybody you talk to raves about his personality. I asked Ben Simmons today after the game, because he, you know, they have that clutch connection. They played pickup together. He raves about Darius Garland. He talked about how shifty he is, how he can get his shot off, talk about what a nice, you know, person he is. Anybody you talk to about Darius Garland likes Darius Garland as the person. I want to see him put it together for one game. And, you know, maybe that's in New York, maybe that's later this week, but I just want to see him have this, you know, where they go to him early. They don't force feed Tristan and Kevin. Let's work on getting Darius some open shots. Let's work on getting him, you know, having a 10-point first quarter and really kind of saying, oh yeah, this is why we drafted this guy fifth overall, because it's important to be patient with him, but you also want to see those results or maybe one breakout game like that. And you see it in the small spots. You saw it today, certainly early in those plays that I talked about. That's what I want to see. I want to see a Darius Garland breakout game this week.
Okay, so my thing with – I agree with that. I would like to see Garland do that as well. I think the last two games have actually been the closest we've seen to him having that kind of breakout. I think you look at the Heat game when he has that 11-point third quarter. That was his only; those were his only points of the game. But he was just like tantalizing for those when he scored all those buckets. You know, you saw him launching the step backs. You saw him getting off some trickier floaters. I think that floater is going to be a nice tool in his bag once it kind of gets refined. That's there. I would also just I'm going to look at the numbers and look at the play breakdowns and stuff and kind of figure out how he's being used. But I would really like to see him run a pick and roll with Kevin Love, run a pick and roll with Tristan Thompson. Colin Sexton, like, probably needs those reps too. Like, I don't think he's good at throwing lobs. I think Garland's just already a better passer, has a better touch, has better vision, all that stuff. I would like to see something like a Darius Kevin pick and roll. Just something where, like, we get to see him just kind of operate directly with a guy like Kevin Love, or throw a lot to Tristan and just do more of that stuff and give him opportunities to make some plays in that regard, and then get him going, and then maybe, you know, allow him to do that stuff. I don't know. I wonder what would be, like, what would push him to just start launching threes. Like, what is going to be, like, the thing where, like, the dam breaks and he's just like, okay, screw this, I'm just going to start bombing step back threes all the time. That I wonder what the breaking point or what the kind of the point of no return is for him in starting to do that.
I think it would be, you know, one of those nights we talked about. If you're going to give Kevin Love a rest night, wouldn't that be your opportunity to do it? Where, you know, okay, that's 20 points that we need to come from other sources. That would be the night that I give Darius a green light. I'd have Tristan out there giving him all the picks that he needs, giving him those screens, giving him some space. He doesn't need a lot of space. I mean, like I said, he's kind of like that Trae Young where, you know, he gets just an inch of space and he can get a shot off. And I'd like to see him get the green light like that. And, you know, even if he misses the first two or three, keep shooting. Keep shooting. Because if he makes two or three in a row, I think he could have that 20-plus point night and really heat up. And then that, you know, I feel like after that, he's got his confidence. He's ready to go. I just think that breakout game's coming. And man, he's so talented. But we haven't seen him put it together for a complete game yet. And like you said, you know, if you put him in that pick and roll with Tristan or Kevin, he's a good passer. We've seen it. We've seen him get into the paint and throw that lob to Tristan at times. we just haven't seen it enough. And, you know, if this is what this season is about, that's great that you won four games early on and you looked really good in spurts. But this season is about Darius Garland and Colin Sexton and Kevin Porter Jr. And how are we going to develop those guys and how can those guys get good fast and, you know, rise this whole team to a competitive level with your veterans? So I think that's the most important part is his performance and the other young guys' performance moving forward.
The thing I would wonder about a Garland breakout, and I think the only other thing that I view as sort of like a really intriguing bit or an intriguing kind of thing to evaluate, it would be something with KPJ. I think that the stuff with him is even really there. I think the feel for the game's there. I think you see him make a move or two a game where you're like, okay, this guy kind of has that good feel. I think it's really interesting that he's had to defend, like, they haven't shied away from having to defend good players. Like, he defended Jimmy Butler decently the other night, defended Ben Simmons a little bit in this game. I wonder if there's a kind of a big game for him, maybe it might be a month from now, but I think that might be coming. I think with Garland, I wonder if he, I don't know this, and I don't think anyone would ever like admit this, but I wonder if you look at him playing a ton with Clarkson, playing a ton with Colin Sexton, I wonder if there's something to the idea that he's deferring to them a little bit just because the hierarchy. And that's sort of what he's kind of being told to do in Bieland's offense. I wonder if again, this is another thing where I need to kind of look at the minutes, see how much he's playing with these guys, but it's a lot of minutes with Sexton. Maybe you kind of have Sexton play with Garland, or Sexton play with Clarkson more, and then you get Garland on that set. Maybe like the swap you make is you sub out Garland a little early, you bring in Clarkson, have him play with the starters, and then you bring back Garland, have him play on that bench unit where it's Nance. It'd be like something like Nance, Garland, Dele, KPJ with like one of Love or Thompson or something like that, or John Henson. Like, I wonder if you make that, if he, because he's playing with Dele, who's going to defer, who's going to pass, do all that stuff, I wonder if that just makes his life a little bit easier.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I think, you know, you go back to last year, you start out the season with George Hill as your starting point guard for the first 10 games. And, you know, Colin Sexton was coming off the bench and he was sharing that backcourt with Jordan Clarkson. Jordan Clarkson is very good at a lot of things. He's not good at enabling young point guards or young guards. He's just not. That's not what he's going to be good at. And you could go back and check Colin's numbers when he got put in the starting lineup, because for a while he would share the court with George Hill. George Hill, who's more interested in a little bit more ball movement, and he's okay not taking a lot of shots, and he's okay giving the ball up. His play got remarkably better. And then he was a starter the rest of the year. Clarkson obviously was the sixth man, and you could really stagger their minutes, and that really helped Collins' development going forward. I mean, he had a big second half of the year, and I think we might be seeing a little bit of the same, because Kevin's Porter is going to come off the bench. Clarkson's going to come off the bench, and I mean, their numbers or their minutes are by default going to have to be with each other. And I'd like to see in stretches, like you said, put him out there with a Dele and a Nance and maybe a Darius Garland, somebody who's more willing to pass, and, you know, stagger those minutes a little bit where he's not on the court with a Clarkson who's, you know, looking to take a lot of shots, and see how he performs there. When I talked to the first time I talked to Kevin Porter Jr. this year, I said, you know, long term, do you view yourself as a shooting guard or a small forward? And he said, neither. He said, I'm a combo guard. You know, he wants to have the ball in his hands. He wants to make plays for others. And I think he's got that capability. You know, I'd like to see, you know, if Dele has to go down, you know, if he has an injury or if you want to rest him or something, give Kevin Porter Jr. the ball as the second unit point guard and see what he can do there. Because I think as he matures, as he gets a taste for the NBA game, I think he is a capable playmaker, either in the first unit or the second unit or wherever you put him. I think the potential is there.
Yeah, I agree. The other kind of things for me this week, this is a tough week for the Cavs. You have New York Monday, at Miami Wednesday, and then they're in Dallas Friday. Then they come home on Saturday to play Portland. So they have like a very tough, I think this could be I don't know what tomorrow will look like. The Knicks are very, very bad. But I think this could be like a 3-loss week for them at the very least. And then you go into like Brooklyn and Orlando and Milwaukee and stuff to finish the month. So this is like a tough stretch for the Cavs. I think you're going to see some dips. I want to see some, you know, I guess I'm more, I would say the one thing I want to see is I liked, if there is a positive to come out of Sunday, I liked what Alphonso McKinney did. I wonder if, you know, maybe you play smaller with him instead of playing Zizic.
Yeah, I can see that, especially, you know, if you want to give him minutes at power forward. Same with Chetty. I mean, Chetty had to play a lot of power forward last year, so if you have to sit Kevin for a game or if you're going to be without Larry, yeah, I'd be curious to see if you go small like that.
I think that's just like one of the only little tweaks you could make, but there's a lot of rotation questions to come. Once Windler's back, once Henson's back, when there's just guys we're going to see back, where there's just a lot of bodies that can have you have an argument to play them, but you know it's not necessarily like there's not a clear way for that to all get sorted out. There's been a pretty strict rotation so far. These injuries, potential load management, stuff like that is going to alter that. So we'll see. But Greg will be back on at some point here. You can find him on Twitter at GregSchwartzBR. He covers Bleacher Report, covers the NBA for Bleacher Report. He doesn't cover Bleacher Report. And he gets to come out to look. It's a Sunday. I don't know what's going on. And he will be. He has his pinned tweet is quite wonderful. So I would recommend going and checking that out. But Greg, thank you so much for joining me as you're making your way home and chatting all things Cavs.
Anytime.